عايز اقول لك I've learned a way to study the water.
The United States of America and you love for the stands on the nation and I indivisible with liberty and justice.
Okay, roll call.
Roll call, Director Green.
Yes.
Director Wigand.
Here.
Director Yeo. Director Tran.
Here.
Director Nguyen. Director Amezcua. Director Jung. Director Meeks. Director Sheldon. Director Bilodeau. You do have a quorum of your committee.
Okay, do we have any items received too late to be agendized?
We do not.
Okay. Visitor participation. Wants to speak? We'll listen. Anybody online either? Okay, moving on to the consent calendar. Do we have a motion?
Tran moved to approve.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Roll call, Director Green.
Yes.
Director Wigand.
Yes.
Director Tran.
Yes.
That motion carries 3-0.
Okay. Moving on to authorize the issuance of a request for proposal for flow reversal reverse osmosis retrofit constructability study. Who's doing that?
Hey, Madam Chair, Alex Wade, our principal engineer, has a very interesting and exciting presentation.
Will they be able to see him if he stands there?
No.
Would he be better off just...
Sure. That way you can control the slides also.
Yeah, I'm ready for the podium, but it's the end of
the... There is no podium.
So really happy to present today on the flow reversal reverse osmosis constructability study request for proposal. And so a little bit of context about the request today. So the GWRS operates at a maximum capacity of 130 million gallons per day of purified water production. But that means that it needs to take in about 174 million gallons per day from Whiskey Sam. And there are several processes that consume some of that water as waste. So the microfiltration process produces wastewater through its backwash process. And the reverse osmosis can only produce so much water based off of its ultimate design criteria. So it has a production recovery of 85%. And each unit can produce about 5 MGD of purified water. So the focus of this study is on the reverse osmosis process and seeing how we can squeeze additional water from the existing facility without going beyond the overall footprint of the existing facility. So one of the processes that our research and development department found to really rise to the top, and there's a lot of different technologies that were investigated to see how much more water we could squeeze out of the RO process. But one of the ones that rose to the top was the flow reversal reverse osmosis process. And so what this does is it takes the static RO that's currently installed at GWRS and makes it dynamic. So it forces the scale formation that would normally clog up the membrane surface. And by making it a dynamic process, it cleans that scale periodically so that you can push that recovery from what was 85% of max production to 90% or even higher with further optimizations. And this process works through two different sequences. There's the flow reversal in the name. So you're sending water back and forth in the pressure vessel. There's also the block rotation. So the existing process operates in a first, second, third stage. What flow reversal can do is take that third stage and float it back into first stage, first to third stage. So by mixing up the process, you're diluting the feed stream and again, reducing that scale formation, increasing recovery. That kind of background of the treatment process for flow reversal. And so from 2021 to 2023, there was a pilot study that was conducted here at GWRS. The pilot skid that you can see in the picture operated for about 18 months and achieved a stable recovery of 89 to 90%. So again, that's about 5% higher than our existing recovery rate. And that was treating the microfiltration, ultrafiltration, filtrate, both from the initial expansion, so that was coming just from plant one, as well as from final expansion, taking that feed stream from plant one and plant two. So proved out on both of those different feed streams. There's also a cleaning process that was optimized as part of this pilot. And that cleaning process is important because the existing facility only needs to be cleaned about every 6 to 12 months. As you increase cleanings, that comes with additional costs and reduced production. So the cost of increasing recovery is you have to do more cleanings, unfortunately. But a 3 month cleaning cycle that was found to be optimized for this particular process. The pilot was also tested for treating RO concentrate directly, and this was found to not be sustainable, so that did not progress any further. So, as part of the preliminary assessment through this pilot study, there's an initial unit cost that was the capital plus the O&M that was about $800 per acre foot for that additional about third of an MGD. And if you look at retrofitting all 27 of the existing units, that would come out to about 8 MGD, roughly about 9,000 acre feet more production from the RO process with that retrofit. And so this was identified in the resilience plan, priority project number 6C, so the demonstration scale project. And you know, there's a lot of different drivers of why we might be interested in doing flow reversal. So the first one is obviously to just make more water. Right? We can squeeze a little bit more water out of that feed stream, reduce the concentrate production. The second one, another driver, is the potential reduction in flows coming from OC sand. So if those flows continue to decline, we need to be able to push more water with the available flow that we got to continue to produce at that 130 MGD production. So really two very important drivers for this project. But we also want to point out that there's a lot of constraints with the full-scale construction. So before just jumping head into retrofitting a train and seeing what happens, really should investigate some of these full-scale construction constraints first. The first and obvious one is Gdarius is fully built. We did the final expansion and there's really no more space. So although flow reversal can retrofit the RO train, there's still additional equipment that's involved. So additional pumps, pneumatic equipment, electrical equipment. So we could do one skid, but going beyond one skid, maybe 27 skids, where do you put that additional equipment? It's a big question. Another full-scale construction constraint is that the systems vary from the original plant to the initial to the final. All of them are a little bit different from each other. So what we do on one unit may not be replicable to the rest of the units. And so there's a lot of learning that needs to be done on which one would actually be the most appropriate to retrofit first if we were to pursue that before going ahead and then trying to do the whole RO building. And there's a lot of other constraints that are associated with this. So operator accessibility, the automatic control coordination, because this is a proprietary control technology and how to integrate that into the existing GDRS is tricky. And we are a potable reuse facility. The regulatory approval for this treatment process, although it's been used for brackish groundwater desalting, for potable reuse, it's some question marks on the regulatory approval for this. So what's the next step? Next step is to conduct that constructability study. So the study would look at analyzing the cost and constraints to retrofit that one RO train. So taking the information that was developed at the preliminary level and develop this with more detail at a full constructability analysis. And then to finally identify the best candidate if we were to pursue a full-scale retrofit. Also looking at what would happen if we did the entire facility? What if we did all 27 RO units? What would the cost be? What would the constraints be to determine if that's even reasonable, or if we would only be stuck with doing one unit, 3 units, 15 units, whatever that number might be? Another key consideration is recommending the contracting method. So determining whether we go straight to the manufacturer, which is in this case Rotec, or going with a general contractor because there's a lot of other work that might be involved in a retrofit. Finally, closing this study would be a life cycle cost analysis to determine if the cost is actually worth it compared to the cost of imported untreated met water. And then finally, is all of this is pointing to, hey, this is good and we have a good ROI, then we look at developing the conceptual design for one retrofit. And just note that this study is included in the next fiscal year's budget. So I just want to close the recommendation to authorize the issuance of the request for proposals for the flow reversal, reverse osmosis retrofit constructability study. Questions?
Any questions? None online.
I see nothing online.
Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Sorry, I just raised his hand.
That's okay. We can do a motion anyhow. Do we have a second?
Yes. I'll second the motion.
Okay. Director Tran, do you have a question?
I do. A couple of questions, if I may. First, how much have we spent on the first report so far? I noticed that the study went all the way back to 2021.
I don't know the number of how much was spent for the pilot operations.
It was partially grant funded through the USBR grant as well.
You know, we can find the details of that, Director Tran, and include it in the board packet that you'll see next week.
Okay. Secondly, and this is something that's technical. We're hoping to get more water through reverse osmosis. But with the costs to get the water, more water, even with OC Sands reduction, does it pencil out financially? With the costs going forward, if we're going to build something or install devices to increase the water intake, how does the cost pan out?
Well, that's the I'll say $1 million question, but who knows how much. That is the question mark that's going to be answered as part of the study, is to determine if there really is a cost benefit here that's conducive to do a project like this, and also what the time scale for this would be. It may not be cost effective now, but if the cost of imported untreated water continues to rise as it's projected to do, and maybe there would be a trigger later on for us to look at a project like this. So those types of questions to determine whether it's cost-benefit analysis would be a part of the study.
And just to add to that, Director Tran, based on what we've done so far, it does look like it will pencil out that the cost of this water could be less than buying the imported water from the Metropolitan Water District. But we need to take this additional step to really get into the details to find out.
Okay, very well, thank you.
Any other?
Yes, Director Wigand has his hand raised.
Director Wigand?
Yes. Would we be safe to say that we would be the only ones doing something like this, or has there anyone else even tried to do this, or is this a kind of like when we started GWRS, we're kind of the pioneers in this technology?
So if we were to implement this at full scale right now, we would be the first to do this in the country for potable reuse. However, there is an existing full-scale facility. It's actually in our backyard. It's in Santa Monica. They're operating the flow reverse or reverse osmosis, but that's for groundwater desalting, not for potable reuse. But there is a full-scale system that we can drive to right now if you want to take a look.
And also, Dr. Gotcha. Wigand, there's a full-scale retrofit that was done in Singapore, PUB, for potable reuse. That's part of where we got some of the initial ideas and data that it's possible to be done on treated wastewater as well as a flow reversal system.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I think this is just another chapter in the book and another thing that we're taking advantage of and doing. So I would be supportive of the motion and second.
Any other questions? No?
I see none.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Green?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Okay. Moving on to OC Sand Button Solids Deep Well Injection Project.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to speak to you today regarding OC Sands Biosolids Innovations. For those of you that aren't sure who we are, We're OC San. We're your next door neighbors. We have basically the same service area you do. We're a little bigger. Sorry about that. An extra 100,000 people in the corners of the little area we serve. We are your dedicated partner. We are the people bringing in that water you were just talking about, committed to providing you with that 174 million gallons a day and meeting it so far. Our facilities, quick overview again, our new headquarters. Please come on by if you haven't had a chance, right across the street from our Fountain Valley plant, which is adjacent to your Fountain Valley plant, and our plant in Huntington Beach. Both of them are providing water to the GWRS system. So everyone's talking about the circular water cycle, and we in Orange County, I think, are leading the way in that. So if you start on the left side of the screen and you see residential and commercial industrial uses and dry weather urban runoff, all of that's coming in as reclaimable flow. We have spent a lot of time. You see that upper line from the Inland Empire brine line, which is our Santa Ana River interceptor. That is all unreclaimable flow. We segregate that out at plant number two. Anything that's treated at plant two in that unreclaimable flow is discharged to the ocean, along with any brines that are created in the GWRS system. All the reclaimable water ends up going to GWRS, back to the aquifer, and around it goes. The issue is, what do you do with all of that enrichment material that people tend to put in water between the time you pump it out of the ground and we receive it? So that's where our solids treatment comes in. It's the biggest part of what we do, and that's really what separates our two missions, is how do we deal with those solids? Historically, we've used agricultural reuse as our primary go-to systems. Those are spread around from Arizona at about 42% of our discharge, but I'll call it reuse. That is direct land application to non-food crops in Arizona, mostly alfalfa and hay production. The balance is being composted for the most part. Most of it's going to either Kern or San Bernardino counties. There's a little bit that stays in the local area at Rialto. We were experimenting with some biochar and pyrolization. That hasn't panned out, but we're always looking for options to make sure we have a place to put the 550 tons a day that we can produce on average. So it's a big mountain. If you fall behind, you're going to need a place for that to go. So the challenges we're all facing across the country, those solids tend to be a place where PFAS wants to go. Generally speaking, if you have one part per trillion PFAS in your water, you're going to see one part per billion PFAS in your solids. So solids do a pretty good job of concentrating PFAS. It's also where the majority of your microplastics are going to end up. We are making methane. The world seems to be turning against methane, especially California. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if the Southern California Gas Company is moving away from methane, that long-term, we better have a plan B also. So that would put our digestion processes in play. So we're trying to look forward. The other thing I'll point out on the slide is electric haul trucks. When you're going as far as we are, 500 miles round trip with 20 to 25 tons of solids, that's awfully difficult and awfully expensive in an electric truck world. So we're trying to find what we're going to do next. That changes our slide up front and adds more options out the backside. You've probably all heard me talk about SQO, supercritical water oxidation. I won't bore you with that again today. But again, that's the thermal conversion of biosolids, any organic compound, to benign products and energy. That's going well. We should receive our unit in August. It's in Orlando undergoing testing right now. But what I'm here to talk to you about is the other option we've been working on, and that's deep well injection. Deep well injection was first thought about at OC San back in 2008. We participated in a study with the city of Los Angeles. It's an idea that is really, really old technology, actually. The oil industry has used deep well injection of oil field waste for years. So we looked at it as an option here in, in Orange County. LA did move forward with it back in 2008 at the Terminal Island Treatment Plant. It has been operating very successfully. They just renewed their third permit for 10 years with the EPA and have no issues, no problems. It's going very, very well. They put about 200 tons a day down their wells. So it's not a small endeavor. So we dusted off our old study. We didn't go forward with it because the former GM here, Mr. Marcus, I remember, looked me right in the eye and said, "Don't you dare talk about putting biosolids underground when I'm trying to tell people GWRS is a great way to put your drinking water in the ground." We believe 20 years on from that point, it's time to rethink what the options are. And I hope to convince you about how the two can work together and make the overall water costs better and the product better for us all. The big opportunity for us, among others, is to get rid of the trucks. By not having to truck more than 500 miles round trip to Arizona and the Central Valley, we take a lot of carbon emissions off the road. We take a lot of trucks off the road. We reduce our risks during seismic events when there may be issues with freeways and highways being cut. Long-term, we're looking at carbon sequestration, which is an awesome opportunity for us, looking for people to share our costs. If we can put all of our biosolids in the ground, back of the napkin calculation, that's really near 250,000 tons of CO2 equivalent per year. So it's a needle-moving amount of carbon, and I think there may be opportunities for us to get funding to help sequester that carbon. In addition, to go with that carbon would be PFAS and microplastics, pharmaceuticals. The forever chemical gets a forever home. So there's a lot of very good reasons for us to be doing this and looking at it. And yes, that is my tagged item. Forever home for forever chemicals. So how do we make sure, for the purposes of this audience, that we aren't going to touch your aquifer or in any way taint what you're doing here? Obviously, we are partners in that. It's super important to us. It is the mainstay of our recycling. So if you look at this quick profile of the geology, we're fortunate that you have this map on the wall, which also shows your aquifer and how it looks. So in that top area, you see the bottom of the aquifer at about 2,500 feet. As you're moving through the layers in this geology, you're going to go from sand to clay, sand to clay. As you get deeper into the Pico and then the Repetto formations, more than 5,000 feet down, instead of it being sand and clay, you're going to end up with shale and sandstone. The idea here is that we have an upper confining layer of shale, which is impermeable rock. And below our target zone, there's also a lower, few hundred foot thick layer of rock. We're going to go right in between that with a directionally drilled well. So you shoot down about 5,000 square feet, turn left and turn right from two different wells that I'll show you, and inject into that sandstone layer. Break up the sandstone, turn it back into sand. You inject your biosolids into that layer. It can't get above the rock. It can't go below the rock. It's just stuck to spread out within the rock. What's really cool about that is it's also got some salt water down there, and it's about 130 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a natural digester. You're putting in solids. The solids are being converted naturally over time into carbon dioxide and methane, just like it was in a digester, just like any formation in America. That's where you're going to get methane production over time. In fact, LA branded their project the Tire Project, which was a Terminal Island reusable energy project. The idea was put the biosolids in, let them digest over time, harvest the gas later. I think in today's world, the better marketing is carbon sequestration. It's not going to make really recoverable amounts of methane that are worth recovery. If that changes in 100 years or 200 years, so be it. It's a resource that's there and available for recapture. But the important thing to us is, over time, we're going to have about 22, if we drill one well, our plan is to drill two wells and have up to 54 years of storage for all the biosolids created at our two treatment plants with no trucking, with full carbon sequestration and conversion of those products to gas recoverable in a future date. A lot of technical stuff on the slide. Most important thing is that magenta concentric circle set around plant number one. That's where we believe the outer edge of our impact will be, 5,000 feet down in sandstone, constrained between two layers of shale rock. Very small footprint. It's a lot of volume. And again, the volume needs go down over time as solids are converted to gas. So very low impact, very low risk. The wells that are put in are triple barreled with annular spaces between each. So if there's ever a leak in any of the particular layers, you'll see it. You can stop production and do the repairs. Having two wells will give us the ability to go back and forth. We're still doing some more studies. Plant two is another place, obviously, we're looking. We have production facilities down there. What you're seeing here are all of the wells that have been drilled over time. Plant two is a pincushion. The West Newport and the Huntington fields that exist around us are very problematic. When you're doing injection, you have to make sure each and every one of those wells is thoroughly capped and won't be a conduit back up into the surface layers. So plant two is much more problematic. That's why we're focusing on plant one. I'll point out, if you look at your own map on the wall, you'll see the injection wells. We're on the ocean side of those injection wells, so still not even under the heart of the system. You'd have the barrier wells pushing against anything that might try to seep up anywhere in the system. So we think it's very well locked away. We think it's very safe and effective. We think it's an environmental win. It's a way for us to sequester not only carbon, but PFAS and microplastics long term. So for us, it's something that we're going to continue to push for. We've been working with the EPA, who really controls this space from a permitting standpoint, and they're very excited. There's always concern about seismicity. If you're fracking sandstone, are you going to unleash the next big one? The answer, we believe, is no, because, again, the rock layers are above and below. We're not breaking rock. We're breaking sandstone, turning it back into sand. So we don't believe there'll be any issues with seismicity. LA has almost exactly the same geology. They haven't seen any seismicity from their 13 years plus of operation. Again, we're working with the EPA. They are the controlling agent. They're very happy with this thought. It also, one thing I haven't talked about, provides some sequestration of nutrients. One of the highest nutrient loads we have is dewatering operations from our digesters. That water coming out is high in ammonia. By not dewatering that and putting it directly into the underground storage, then we don't put that in the ocean, and that will improve the ocean environment also. We are, again, moving forward. We're finishing our study. Plant one looks good. We added a piece on just to make sure plant two gets a look. It's looking pretty dire because of all those wells that are around us. We've already met with the EPA and continue to meet with them. We have a project in place, J143. It's in our budget for next year. We're targeting about, last I saw, about $85 to $90 million to get this done. That would be two wells at plant number one with a trucking facility so we could truck loads of water solids from plant two to plant one and dispose of them there. Long term, that would give us a lot of flexibility. We don't want to put all our eggs in any one basket. Supercritical water oxidation is still moving forward. We'll talk about how we link the two plants, move back and forth, and have different options at different plants. And with that, I can answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? Sure.
Thank you very much, Rob. Great presentation. And, I think this is a very promising project. I'm glad you guys are taking a look at this. Want to encourage you to go forward with it. I'm just interested in, you said, you know, all those trucks going 500 miles round trip. So what is your offsetting disposal cost that you have now that you guys face? Do you have kind of a rough number annually as to what that is?
It's more than rough because it's contracts.
Yes.
We spend about $14 million just in hauling and reefs. We don't dispose of reefs.
Okay, right. So $14 million and then whatever you'd get for carbon credits maybe in the market there.
Correct.
And you turn good. ROI on
we can turn off three centrifuges at plant one, which quarters of a megawatt, and chemicals to do that process, very expensive, energy intense process.
So there are a lot of things in play to give us a good ROI.
Yes. And truck loading is another big consumer, labor, all of that.
Right. Good. Thanks for pursuing this.
Next question here. Okay. How about online?
Don't see any.
I had one. Is our staff taking a look at this, you know, just to make sure that, you know, Mike Marcus was saying absolutely not, or, you know, were we, you know, doing our due diligence, or what's our, you know, analyzation, I guess, process of this to make sure that, you know, we're on board?
I'll start. Yeah, yes, we are. Roy Herndon is embedded in the project team over at the sanitation district and is following what's going on. Obviously we want to follow this very closely and make sure we're comfortable with it in the end. We're at the early stages, but there is some momentum as Rob pointed out, and things are looking promising so far, but still, we may even want to, you know, bring in outside experts to give us a second or third opinion, because, you know, for obvious reasons, we have to protect the groundwater basin. But so far, it appears it can be done as they're doing up in L.A. But definitely more to come on this.
Okay.
And we're partners. We asked for the resource to be in on the proposal of the study, I should say. So we're committed. We understand the number one thing we do is water reclamation. But I just want to remind you that solids will stop water. If we can't find reliable outlets for the solids, then they end up in the water. So it's important that we understand these two things are linked and one supports the other.
Right. No, I appreciate it, Rob. Yeah, no, it's all good stuff. I think it's very promising. I just want to make sure that we're doing everything we can, and I think we are. So I'm happy to see that.
Any other questions? Director Yeo?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Green, and thank you, Rob. I was just going to ask similar question as what Director Wagon did. And I'm sure we have a lot of smart people in the room. We're early in the stage of, you know, developing this potential project. And I'm sure that they will look at the issue from all angles. And obviously, protecting our groundwater basin is of our utmost you know, important mission here, and we can figure out a way to safely introduce this material here locally into the ground and not compromising our groundwater basin. I'm all for it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Next, can we go to the prop? Thank you very much, Rob. Great report. Prado basic sand removal.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll just give a quick update. Next week at the board meeting, we are going to recommend going out to bid to hire a contractor to remove sand behind Prado. So we have an obligation of moving 250,000 yards. It's a permit obligation of, and we have to get that out of Prado Basin. If we have to do it all on our own, dig it out, move it out of Proto Basin and then truck it somewhere in the community, that total cost could easily be $40 to $50 a yard, which gives you a total cost of at least $10 million. And that's an obligation we have because we got to store water behind Prado up to elevation 505 year round. So as the board's aware, we've been meeting with lots of people and trying to find people who might want to take the sand. I mentioned last week to the board that we had a really good meeting with the city of San Clemente, and they need sand and they seem very interested. Last Thursday, we had a very good meeting with OCTA. They need sand for a very similar reason. And so it appears, you know, the stars and planets are aligning, and we may have somebody who can come and take the sand. The issue for us is we have to put it somewhere that's accessible. Where we're digging the sand out at Prado is a very inaccessible location. It's deep inside Prado, and we need to truck the material about 3 miles north to put it in an accessible spot where people can come and get it. And this property we're looking at is actually owned by Orange County. And so we need a permit to stockpile it there. But if we can get it there, then there's lots of people who may want to come and get it. Right now, we can truck about 100,000 yards of material up there. And that would be a big step toward meeting our obligation of 250,000 yards. Now, our cost just to truck it those 3 miles could be $1 to $2 million, $10 to $20 a yard, depending on the bidding climate when we would go out to bid. There is a lot of momentum to do some sort of project with somebody. It's going to take a lot of work this summer. We need to get a permit from the Corps. We need to do work with the county. We need a state permit. But our goal would be to have this material, we would be start stockpiling it on September 1st. And in the fall, we could eventually get 100,000 yards up there. Neither OCTA or San Clemente or even a third party would come and get it. However, we need to hire a contractor to take it to that accessible location. And so next week, we're going to have a detailed presentation and ask the board to allow us to go out to bid to get construction contracts and prices on what it would cost us. So that's all it is today, just to warn you what's coming. And we'll have more details next week. But it could be a giant savings for us if we only have to move it 3 miles north and then other people would take it. It's a huge potential opportunity. Yeah.
Okay, that's the end of our agenda.
Director Wagner, hand
raised. Oh.
Yeah, John, I just want to thank you and your team. A lot of connections being made and a lot of discussions being had. So I appreciate a lot of the hard work that's being done with a lot of the folks involved.
Thank you.
Director Amezcua, do you have a question?
No, is my hand raised?
Okay. All right. We are finished with our agenda. Let's agendize. Are we going to have the same report from Rob at the board meeting?
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. Then we'll have all the items on the consent calendar. Do we have any directors' announcements or reports? Not seeing it. General manager?
Just one item. A few of you already know, but Bruce Dozier announced he'll be retiring on July 11th. So good for Bruce.
Okay. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.